Hey, super awesome listeners. Welcome back to What Are You Listening To? This week, it's part two of Jen's conversation with Mo Shafiq. We'll join the show already in progress with Jen's first pick.
I love that.
Well, for my first pick, we're going to transition backwards, Mo. We're going to go right back to Elizabethtown, which was funny. It was when I first saw that My Father's Gun was your song. I'm like, if this were anybody else, I would think they were an Elton John fan. But I kind of think because Mo is my soundtrack guy that he's going to be with me on this. And I think this is about Elizabethtown. So I'm super glad that I was right in that prediction because I got to pick one of my favorite songs from that soundtrack. And again, if you haven't listened, of course, Cameron Crowe's brilliant when it comes to soundtracks, but this one really delivers, and it delivers some songs that maybe you're not familiar with. And one of them is a favorite of mine by Ryan Adams called Come Pick Me Up.
I have this very strange relationship with Ryan Adams. I know the world does now too, but is that like he's been like in my life for, you know, the last 20 years, but like I've never owned a Ryan Adams record. So my wife Julie, I mentioned yes. earlier, biggest Elizabethtown fan of all time. When I told her I was doing this podcast, I was like, the host is like, also put the Ryan Adams song from Elizabethtown on here. She was like, oh, she's a secret Elizabethtown fan. And I was just like, yeah, probably. But when listening to it, I was like, this song was in my life before Elizabethtown. This song was in my life. Ryan Adams was in my life for years, but I've never actually deliberately listened to Ryan Adams. I was living in New York City, billboards of the artwork for Gold, you know, everywhere, like Heartbreaker. I was on tour with my friends, I'm the Avalanche, back in 2005. And this album was just on repeat. And so like, I know these songs, and like, he was ubiquitous for so long, but like I, for the longest time, just like never put two and two together that Ryan Adams, you know, Pitchfork Zone, you know, everyone's favorite, you know, cigarette smoking, you know, heartbreaker, so to speak, was the name of the person whose songs were just on constant rotation on all of my cool kid friends, like mixtapes and whatever they'd put on when they'd put their iPod shuffle on or whatever from Dating Myself or, you know, any of that stuff on yes. the road and the van, you know? So yeah, even though I should have known that that was an old school, I truly like, in my head, like any New York set romantic comedy probably had a Ryan Adams song,
right?
You know, like, I don't know. So yeah, go on. Yeah. So tell me about your relationship with Ryan and this album. Cause I know this album is so important to a lot of people.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and when I say the album is important, Heartbreaker is a separate story, but the album that's important for this conversation, I think, is the Elizabethtown album. This one, and he does figure prominently. I think this just popped into my head too when I think of him in soundtracks. Answering Bell is on the Bridesmaid soundtrack. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. That's another Ryan Adams classic that appears. But I've listened to Ryan Adams for a long time. I'm actually a huge Whiskey Town fan. Whiskey Town was his band before he went solo, and they have an album called Stranger's Almanac that's one of my favorite all-time albums. The world does have a strange relationship with Ryan Adams right now, but again, I think that we've talked about this before, like you have to talk about these things. You can't just sweep them under the rug or else you sort of freeze things in time. So I think that I love this song, one, because of the scene in the movie that it appears in. The scene in Elizabethtown is this magical, magical scene where Orlando Bloom and Kirsten Dunst are first getting to know each other, and they have this amazing all-night phone conversation that they then decide they're about 45 minutes away from one another, and they decide they've been talking all night. They're only 45 minutes away from one another. Why don't they just meet halfway and watch the sunrise? And I mean, if you've been lucky enough to have that kind of an experience in your life, you just can't capture it any other way than the perfect song, right? Like that memory of what it feels like whenever you're so excited and confused and like the doubt of, is this person too good to be true? Like, who doesn't love that part of a new relationship? And that's what this song means to me. That's what this song says, the longing, the harmonica, the beautiful female backing vocals. It just so captures the magic of the get to know you days of a relationship, you know, when you're just desperate for that lasting connection. And the song just has everything that conveys that to me, like everything all in one song.
I know. That scene is really incredible as well, too. Another scene that I didn't appreciate until upon second and third watching, like the true, very faithful sort of non sequitur version of what it would be like to peer into a several hours long conversation in fits and starts. Like you just, yes, you just drop in on like the end sentence of like another thought. And then it doesn't, the next corresponding shot of the person responding isn't them answering that question, but rather their own sort of, you know, fragmented thought that is part of loosely tangentially connected. Do you ever feel like you've been asleep your whole entire life? Just like, yes, like that. Him looking at a photo of his father and then seeing his mom and just being like, they met in an elevator. You know, things like that where just sort of like, I don't know, just especially given that tangentially those two just sort of met on a plane, right? Like it's sort of, they connect in like weird alien ways that like, you know, you never realize how significant, important moments are, but this is one of those scenes where like both those characters know what, like deliberately they actually know they're fully engaged with one another. And you know, I love the scene. I love the choice of song, and the song's incredible. It really is. It's like,
it's such a good song.
Yeah,
it's such a good song. And yeah, I think again, it's all the more reason to go back and revisit Elizabethtown. If you haven't seen it since it originally came out in 2005, definitely go back and revisit. And I did have a question for you, but you've answered it for us. I was like, so since we've covered Elizabethtown, does this mean that I can expect a repress of the Elizabethtown soundtrack coming soon?
Yes. So, like I said, we're working on Jerry right now, which, you know, maybe you should revisit Jerry because that's a 5-star masterpiece. But
we can't even. Don't even get me started.
But then, yes, the plan is to do Elizabethtown. My wife would murder me if we didn't do Elizabethtown. But the thing about these reissues that's been fascinating, and I can't really speak too far out of turn because there's a little bit of stuff behind the scenes that is sort of always developing, but like the peek under the curtain has been really fascinating. So like you got the Say Anything record, and in the process and the discovery of that album, you know, Cameron put together his dream playlist of what that the expanded version of that soundtrack would be, featuring all the songs that were in the film but not on the previous release. And then they were also like, oh, we found this, and it was a cassette tape that had Nancy Wilson. Nancy Wilson from Heart, his
wife, ex-wife.
And then ex-wife, teaching the actress Lily Taylor how to play the Joe Lies songs.
Yes.
And it was just like a 10-minute cassette tape that she recorded and sent to teach her how to play the guitar. And we included that on the album, and that was just like one of those like, what? So for
and
Jerry,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I cannot wait.
it's incredible. It's incredible. So for Jerry, the weird thing that I learned on that one is that Amy Mann, the song mm-hmm. Wise Up, which would later be most famously popularized Magnolia. For being in Magnolia,
right,
was actually written previously, and it was for Jerry Maguire, and it was part of Amy Mann was supposed to write the soundtrack to Jerry Maguire. There are demos of songs that she wrote that would be later not end up being included, but including that whole entire song, Wise Up, wouldn't even be included in the film. But there's a song that was written for the film that was called Oh Jerry that would later become the song Susan on Bachelor Number 2. I don't know how familiar you are with Amy Mann, but like things that like I've heard that demo and I've seen that whatever. With Elizabethtown, it's been implied to me that Ryan Adams had written a bunch of songs because he was supposed to write the soundtrack to Elizabeth. It was like another one of those situations. So there's like a bunch of stuff like that where I'm like, I can't wait to crack open the hood on that one. Cause like, there's so much about this movie and its production that I want to know everything about. And we haven't quite gotten there yet, but I've seen initially that like there was supposed to be a whole bunch of like a whole other album's worth of music that probably just didn't end up being created, like that fictional Amy Mann Jerry Maguire soundtrack that doesn't exist, though it does exist, and it did sort of become Magnolia in a way, which is probably very fascinating in that era of music, right? Also
for sure. Yeah, but when I think of Amy Mann and her music, I immediately think of Paul Thomas Anderson, right? I think of him using her, not Cameron Crowe. But, you know, Cameron Crowe is so good at, I feel like he's a guy, you know, like us, that has always loved music. If you saw Almost Famous, you know that about him. But yeah, I think that he references old songs that are important to him, but he also keeps a pulse on new artists, especially singer-songwriter type artists that he also often gives a voice to in his film. So I love that about him, and I cannot wait. I'm going to have you back, Mo, whenever you get everything reissued, because we'll have to, I could do many episodes alone on just Cameron Crowe movies, but I'll be so excited to see like what you dig up and what is sort of, you know, extra bonus footage that comes out of this endeavor, because there's so much good stuff. You know, I know that, I don't know where it is or if that's something that's going to be re-released, but I can remember, again, you know, I had the privilege of working on the film at DreamWorks, and they had a Stillwater album rolling around the studio for a while that I still wish I would have stolen out of the marketing meeting back in the day. What I wouldn't give for that Stillwater album cover. Right. But stuff like that, I just think that there's got to be so much of that hasn't even been explored yet. That's yeah. just untapped and in Cameron Crowe's brain or vault or whatever. And even, you know, with Say Anything, the popularizing the, you know, In Your Eyes, I know that that wasn't the original song that was to play there. And everybody's heard the stories about how John Cusack like fought and fought and fought. He hated it. I think he wanted like a Fishbone song or something mm-hmm. cooler, yeah. You know, and then ends up with the magic that is In Your Eyes, and that whole scene. Yeah, so
it sealed his place in the rom-com Hall of Fame, right?
For sure, for sure.
Before we close the book entirely on Elizabeth Town, yes, to answer your question, he does have a very vast archive of all of his stuff, including the murder bike from this film. I've been told that like that thing is still just sitting in storage.
And, yes,
like, people are sort of like, oh, Cameron, get rid of that. And he's like, I can't, the memories. But when we did tell Cameron how big of a fan my wife was of Elizabeth Town, he unprompted sent her a signed Japanese one sheet from Elizabeth Town with a note dedicated to her, literally saying like, Julie, thank you for being basically one of the world's only Elizabeth Town fans. Thank you for liking this weird little movie I made, and it's the sweetest thing, and it's hanging in our living room. So. The soundtrack are very important to us.
Well, never invite me over, because then it'll be hanging in my living room, because that I will just walk right out with. Well, we talk about taking left turns. I guess this isn't so much of a left turn, given that I sort of spoiled it earlier on, but my second pick is a song called Here's Where the Story Ends by the Sundays. So this song, really, like the genuine answer about how this came onto the playlist was, originally it was because that Sheep Literature song just so much evoked and reminded me of the Sundays. And then the second thing is, I was like, surely this song was in a movie. Like, surely it was in like 500 Days of Summer or High Fidelity or whatever. And I started digging around and I'm like, I don't think it was. There are other...
Exact same thought. I was like,
right?
What movie do I know this from? This is, I yes. definitely know this from a movie, right? And I
thought so too.
Yeah, it was truly, it was the most like Mandela effect thing that's ever happened to me, where I was like, God, yeah, I loved that, you know, like I fictionalized a whole entire movie in my brain that I've heard this from, or at least that has been popularized by. But no, it's just a cultural osmosis, but also, to speaking about hooks, like it's just one of the most memorable song hooks like of all time. Like when I first put it on, my journey with the song was that I listened to it and I was like, I don't think I know this song, and then immediately got to the chorus and I was like, of course I know this song,
right?
Yeah,
I think it's just, you know, I think that when I was digging around trying to see if it was on a soundtrack somewhere, I did see that they did another one of their big hits was they did a cover version of Wild Horses by the Rolling Stones. And that's been in several things. That was in the movie Fear in 1996. It was in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV show. It was in the TV show Friends from College. So I saw that one popping up around. But I was really shocked that this one hadn't been in a movie that I could discern. And then the other thing was, like, you know, again, this song came out in 1990. I was in high school when this song came out. And I recently just came back from a trip to Oklahoma City, which is where I was born. And on the way home from Oklahoma City, we also drove through Denton, Texas, which is up in North Texas where I went to college. And so it really, like, brought this song back, because that was around the time when all of, you know, when this was coming out. And so it really did. It was serendipitous that the Sheep Literature song happened, and then this trip happened, and then the Sundays. Like, again, though, that's what I love about music, and sort of the cyclical way it comes in and out of your life when you least expect it and when you needed it. You know, I think that during the pandemic, the very beginning of the pandemic, I was listening to the Sundays a lot. Just the melancholy was hitting right, and I liked it. And then I kind of put it away. I was like, all right, I gotta, like, pick it up. I gotta get happy. Like, no, I, you know, at the beginning, we didn't know we were gonna be locked down for 2 years. But it was super, this song has, like I said, come in and out of my life at just the right time. It seems like every time I hear it. So I was grateful to you for the Sheep Literature, because they're kind of like my new version of the Sundays. Yeah. And I have so enjoyed, like, going down the rabbit hole with them. I think before we wrap up, even though this song wasn't a soundtrack song, can you offer any insight, just because I do love, I check the Mondo Shop site often to see what you guys have in the record store, because I'm always looking for that next soundtrack to round out my collection. How do you guys pick the soundtracks? Do you just sit around and are like, hey, we could do this, or hey, we could do that? I know that you have, there has to be some mystery around it, but can you share anything about what drives you to choose certain films or TVs or TV shows or video games?
Yeah, it's a little different these days than it used to be, right? Because we and this sounds like a little bit of tooting our own horn a little bit, but we kind of were on the forefront of putting film music back on vinyl a decade ago, around the time of the vinyl boom. And that's not like, not, that's like a faint praise award. It's not really a thing that's like worth celebrating. But at the same time, like, every meeting we took, we were like, we'd love to put this out or reissue this. And they're like, on vinyl? And like, yeah. And, you know, this was like us being like, yeah, we want to reissue the soundtrack to Jurassic Park on vinyl. And they're like, okay, good luck, kid. Like, okay. And then, like, nowadays it'd be like, why, what, who in their right minds would ever say that that's not really like that? That's a no brainer, right? Like, it's the most popular soundtrack of all time, John Williams. But like, you'd be surprised how much of that we hit along the way. And right behind me, you see two very important soundtracks to me. This is not a visual medium, but I'm pointing to the soundtrack to Josie and the Pussycats, which I can go on for about, for, you know, 10 hours if this was one of those kinds of podcasts. But then also the soundtrack to Mission Impossible, the 1996 Mission Impossible film, which was one of the first film scores I ever became obsessed with. It's a Danny Elfman score. And so, like, those two, I kind of keep them up here because, like, they're both reminders of, like, projects that, like, when I first started at the company, I was like, I would always love to do those. And it just took forever to figure out how to do it, because, like, the rights are always such a nightmare. And nowadays, you know, things get brought to us, and which is really cool. Like, you know, Disney comes to us and be like, hey, do you want to do Ant-Man? Or do you want to do, you know, this? Or, and then, you know, Warner Brothers has this and whatever. So, like, there's things get brought to us all the time, and it's really cool. And, you know, we still vet that. We watch things. We take them into consideration. We only have so much bandwidth to do things. But, like, things like this, like, I'd say, like, you know, 10 projects a year, we're going back to the well and being like, I've always really wanted to play in that. I've always wanted to work on that. You know, there's only so much time in the day and so much time in the year that you can do it. But we really just sort of have a running list of our favorites. You know, like, I've been working on, speaking of Paul Thomas Anderson, I've been working on, we did Magnolia years and years ago. That was like a holy grail for me. And now we're getting Punch Drunk Love out later this year. And I literally
have you guys done Boogie Nights? And no, I missed it.
Yeah, not yet.
We haven't come on.
So that one. I guess we started with, like, the hey, we should. I don't know. Everyone thought of us as the score album people, but now we do both. So we could always go back and do it. But there was the original, like, sort of like, oh, we should do the scores only. So Magnolia started that, and then Punch Drunk, and then it's only been scores ever since, really.
Got it.
Earth Pizza, but yeah, we should go back. I agree. I think that would be really cool. We've done artwork for it, and Paul likes us, so I think we can and should. But yeah, so I mean, it's a mix of, like, things that we're obsessed with and have always been obsessed with. I say we, it's my partner Spencer Hickman from the UK, who started Death Waltz Records. We merged like 8 years ago, and he's, you know, a 50-year-old goth, you know, British man who you grew up on Morrissey and the Smiths and horror movies. And I'm a kid who thought Josie and the Pussycats was the best movie ever. So, you know, we meet halfway in the middle and we have a different taste, which is what I guess what the secret sauce is. But the process is sort of a little sillier than you'd probably predict. We just kind of follow our bliss and follow our hearts, really. And it hasn't steered us wrong yet. Yeah.
Well, you tell me when the suggestion box opens, because I will flood you all day long with all of the soundtracks that I've been dying to have on vinyl my entire life.
Well, that's the one thing that's really worth noting is that, like, as Spotify just becomes the norm, the things that just don't exist are soundtracks. Like, you can find tracks from soundtracks, but things, a lot of times, right, things that were written for soundtracks and a lot of comps like that, the rights were so tricky that you can't find them. And it's so funny to me because, like, now I go on there and the fact that the playlist you put together has the Elizabethtown artwork on it, I bet, though, there's no complete Elizabethtown soundtrack on there, because I bet there's a bunch of things that just aren't even on Spotify and things like that. Even the Jerry Maguire soundtrack, there's songs that are just not on Spotify and you can't put those together. And don't get started on songs that were written for movies, you know, like, because those things just,
yes,
don't ever end up on places. It's really fascinating. So
yeah, that would be a fun episode to have as well. Like, songs that were supposed to go in certain movies and didn't, and were replaced by something else. There are lots of stories of those that I'm familiar with too. So that would be a fun episode to do. Look, I've already pre-booked you for two more episodes, Mo. How do you feel about that?
I like it. I like talking to you. You're good music conversationalist. I like that. There's not a lot of that in my life. So thank you.
Well, and the ability to talk with someone specifically about soundtracks is, like, such a huge gift for me, because that's, I always joke that soundtracks are my love language. It's just the way that I it's the way I discovered new artists when I was a kid. It sort of gave me the independence to pick my own music, right? Because you sort of grow up, my parents love music. We always had music on in the house. I can't remember a time in my life I didn't have a record player and was actively using it. That was one of the first things I learned as a kid, was how to gently pick up the needle from a record. And I have my grandparents' old record players, console stereo, in my house today. So it's always been a big part of my life, but soundtracks were sort of what gave me the autonomy to choose the music that I liked and not just what my parents were listening to. And it started with the Grease soundtrack. That was the first album that I bought. It was this beautiful double album that opened up. And I still have such great memories around that. And so soundtracks have always held a really special place in my heart. And so I love that I have the ability to talk about that genre of music specifically with you. So thank you so much, Mo, for sharing what you're listening to this week. I really do appreciate it. This was a great episode.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Well, to learn more about Mondo and Death Waltz Records, you can visit the website at mondoshop.com. That's MONDOSHOP, or on Instagram at Mondo News, MONDONEWS. And you can also follow Mo's personal Instagram at Mo Shafiq. That's MOSHAFEEK. And please be sure to follow, download, and share this show with everyone you know and all the people you'd like to know, because music is a great way to connect. Last but not least, to stay informed on all things Super Awesome Mix and What Are You Listening To, please follow us on Instagram at Super Awesome Mix. Thanks for listening, and please join me again next week to find your new favorite song.